This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Between 60 and 90,000 cars every day make the trip between Bernie and 1604. That number is expected to climb. So I-10 along that route is being upgraded. But in the meantime, many people are feeling the pain. Do you drive that commute every day? What's it like? Do you think that you're needs? Are you being well served by the decisions that are being made right now to upgrade I-10 between 1604 and Bernie? Also, they're looking at doing a similar project along I-35. Call in with your questions and comments at 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource at tpr.org. Tweet at us at tprsource. We're joined this hour with Mario Jorge. He is an engineer with the Texas Department of Transportation in San Antonio District. And Mario, welcome to The Source.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Sid Martinez is here. He's the director of the Alamo Area Metropolitan Planning Organization. Sid, welcome.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
And Professor Bill Barker is here, an adjunct associate professor in urban and regional planning at the College of Architecture, Construction, and Planning at UTSA. And Professor Barker, welcome to The Source.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So, Mario, if you could give us an update on there's a lot going on in I-10, so kind of tell us what's happening.
Yes, sir. There sure is. So there's two types of projects that are going on I-10 West from 1604 out to Bernie, and there are two different types of projects. I want to describe that so then I can get into a little bit more specific. One of the things we're doing, and this was a decision that was made years ago, as the growth in that area has just exploded, is to convert the frontage roads from a two-way operation to a one-way operation. That's a much safer operation. And as you know, throughout town on 410 and all the major freeways, all the frontage roads are one-way. In the rural areas, some of them are two-way, and they just serve that purpose for that rural environment. But as the urbanization has really taken a hold of that I-10 West corridor, we made the decision to go ahead and convert the frontage roads to one-way. So that's ongoing. There's multiple projects addressing that. And then the second type of project that we have ongoing is to expand the Interstate 10 main lanes themselves from two lanes in each direction to three lanes plus an HOV lane in each direction, a high occupancy vehicle lane in each direction. So it'll be a total of 8 lanes when we're done with the project from 1604 to Ralph Fair Road. So those are the two different types of projects that are going on. That's why there's work being done both in the main lanes as well as the frontage roads.
And so Sid Martinez with the Alamo Area MPO, Metropolitan Planning Organization, talk about the planning that y'all do. Y'all are trying to look at the growth trends, where people are, where the usage is, what the roads are now. How do y'all figure out that these are the plans that need to be funded and give the green light?
Yeah. So we're responsible for doing a long-range transportation plan. It's a 25-year plan that's updated every 5 years. And that's the plan that facilitates our regional funding, both on federal and state dollars for transportation. And so through that plan, we start off with a demographic analysis. We start with a base year. We know, for example, for this plan that we're in now, our base year is 2015. So we know what the conditions were in 2015 in terms of population and employment. And then we forecast that out 25 years. And we try our best, working with folks at CPS, the City of San Antonio, SAWS, Bexar County, Kendall County, City of Bernie, in regard to this area, to look at what that growth is going to occur, that growth is coming in those 25 years, and we try to figure out where people are going to live, where people are going to work, how they're going to get to and from their locations, and that's how we can determine where we need that additional capacity. So a project like this has been in our plans for a long time, for at least, I think, 20 years, we've had this I-10 expansion in our plan in some form or fashion. It's changed in terms of how much funding it's received, and it's changed in the scope of project. At one time, it was a toll project, for example. That's what we look at in what we need in the region in terms of moving people.
So if I live in Bernie and I want to get to San Antonio and I don't want to take I-10, what are my choices?
I-10.
I'm stuck on I-10.
Well, and Mario brought up a good point. I mean, the expansion that's going to happen to with this project will include an HOV, and it's also what we call a transit priority lane. So we're hoping that there'll be some type of transit option, hopefully pretty soon from when the project is complete, that would be a connection from Bernie into San Antonio.
So Professor Bill Barker really likes, you know, committed to one highway to connect a major urban area, you know, San Antonio to Bernie. Isn't that like a failure of planning?
Well, you know, I used to work for NASA a long time ago, and they would call that a single point of failure. It is true that really we need to be thinking about options, route options, mode options, options as far as where you live and work, and maintaining as many options as possible, in my view, is the successful strategy for planning for the future.
But right now there are no options. There's really nothing else you can do unless you want to drive 40 miles out of your way, right?
You can take State Highway. I mean, I was joking about it. I tend to your best option more than likely, but State Highway 46 is kind of a loop, a kind of a somewhat of a loop that connects, you know, 281, 35. So technically, if you wanted to avoid I-10, you could drive on 46 to 281, come into San Antonio, you can drive to 35. I think what you were getting at, though, is if you don't want to drive, maybe is what you were at.
No, I was just wondering if there's another way to get here.
Yeah,
because all I hear about is I-10, okay. And I know that one fender bender, and you've made a lot of people unhappy on that road because mm-hmm. everyone is dependent on that.
Yeah, and there are some other ways to get around. I mean, yeah, it might take you longer, you know, and hopefully with the expansion, you would provide more ability for accidents to wouldn't block, in other words, cause as much congestion as they do today.
So what's the population growth in that area along I-10? What's that looking like?
So in terms of our forecast for the next 25 years, we're anticipating a 76% increase in Kendall County.
Wait,
in terms of
how many?
76%. So it's about right now the population in Kendall County is about 50,000. So it'll go up to about 80,000. I mean, we're anticipating some pretty big growth. If you look at the fastest growing areas in the country, right, San Antonio, Bexar County is one of the fastest growing counties in terms of numeric growth. But in terms of percentage growth, Comal County and Kendall County are in the top five nationally for growth. And so we're going to see some explosion of growth in those counties that are then coming into work in San Antonio every day. And so,
right. So it's not just growth that's going to be there. That's growth that's going to be part of our overall infrastructure dependent.
Yes. And the more interesting part is that if you look at the growth in Bexar County, the population growth that we have here is mainly through natural birth. So about 40% is migration into this area. In Comal, in Guadalupe, and in Kendall County, it's about 90% migration. And so you're seeing that growth happening immediately, which means those people are coming with demands on roads, demands on schools. You know, they're not growing into the community. They're coming here with all of those needs.
Yeah, so when we talk about growth, I think about two different types of growth that we experience ourselves. Mm-hmm. Either we can have healthy tissue and muscles and we can grow really great organs, or we can grow tumors that don't have a lot of healthy benefits. And so if we don't do the proper planning, if we don't think about how are we going to have ingress and egress, how are we going to supply these areas that are growing with everything they need to be healthy organs, then we're looking at growing tumors onto San Antonio. Not to be, you know, I'm not trying to put these areas down. I'm just saying it's going to be a mess. And so hopefully that's what your job is, you know, said Martinez at the MPO. How are we going to make these areas of growth healthy? What kind of resources, investments are we going to put into these areas right now so it'll be a benefit for the entire community going into the future? And we want to hear from our listeners. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. What's your take on this growth? Stay tuned. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about construction along the I-10 corridor, making room for future people here now, because these corridor is already overwhelmed. What does that look like? And we're feeling the pain now in building this out. What are your concerns? Number is 210-614-8980. I want to bring on the line District 8 City Councilmember Manny Pelaez. Councilman Pelaez, welcome back to The Source.
Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
So what are you hearing from your constituents?
Well, it's a quality of life issue for them, right? When they're stuck in traffic, they're thinking about better places they'd rather be with their loved ones or at work. And I'm one of those folks. It's incredibly frustrating. And, there's one thing, however, that worries me very much, and that is that there's police and fire, first responders, who are also stuck in traffic sometimes. And so it's not just a quality of life issue. I remind my constituents and my neighbors out there that sometimes it's a life or death issue. And so we take this very, very seriously.
And the construction going on now, this is investment that's looking towards the future. Are we doing everything we can to make sure that the construction is being done in a way that doesn't hobble use of the highway presently?
The answer is yes, right? That's one of the threshold responsibilities of government, is to make sure that as we build out infrastructure, we do it in a way to not make things more worse than they already are. And yet, whenever we go and we walk around, we've always seen those, please pardon our dust signs. Really, this is just mostly a test on people's patience. And we're always telling folks, this is going to get worse before it gets better. But the end result is always something that people appreciate, which is more capacity on these roads and the ability to get home and to work a little quicker.
I don't drive that way often, but when I do, going through those concrete chutes, and they seem so narrow and tight, and then I finally get to my destination, and I have to get someone to pull my fingers off my steering wheel because I'm gripping it so tight. It is really, it's tough on the nerves to drive that route. I guess this is just the reality of getting to where we want to go?
The answer is yes. Unfortunately, the pain of additional traffic or of heavy traffic requires, additional investment in infrastructure. Driving during a construction zone is a different kind of pain experience. What's really, really worrying me more than anything else, however, is that there is no case out there for any city, major city, that's ever tried to embrace and manage its traffic problem. There's never been a situation where you solve it by only building your way out of it. And so that's why, at the city of San Antonio, we're investing so much effort and time on really looking at multimodality, right? And making sure that people have every available way of getting through their city and across town other than in a vehicle.
All right. City Council Member District 8, Manny Pelaez, I want to thank you so much for joining us and giving us an update from your perspective. So I want to switch over to Professor Bill Barker from the University of Texas San Antonio Architecture, Construction, and Planning Department at the college there. Council Member Pelaez talked about no city's ever built their way out of this type of congestion. Can you talk about that?
Sure. I think one city to look to is Vancouver, British Columbia, which is not very different in size than San Antonio. Interestingly, they don't have any freeways going through their city, and yet they are repeatedly pointed out as one of the most livable cities in North America, if not the world. And they have worked on developing good land development strategies and so on, and their traffic is actually going down while their population is going up as a result of that. Kansas City, on the other hand, is a city that has more miles of freeway per capita than any other city in the U.S., and they travel a lot more by car than even we do in San Antonio, and we're we're above average. The average citizen in San Antonio travels 5 vehicle miles, one vehicle going 1 mile is a vehicle mile, 5 vehicle miles a day, more than the average for cities our size, which adds up a lot in cost and pollution and energy consumption and you name it, traffic congestion, of course. And so there are some examples out there to look at other cities that we can learn from on how to do things differently.
Mario Jorge with the Department of Transportation, TxDOT. You hear people saying about those concrete chutes are so narrow and doing the construction just never seems to be never ending. What do you tell folks who have those complaints?
Sure. No, absolutely. We hear them. We drive them, obviously, as well in the community. So the best way to describe a project expansion like I-10 or any other major expansion that we have going on is just imagine if you are completely rebuilding your home while you're still living in it, and your whole family is living in it, and you're still using the kitchen, the restrooms, and everything in the house. And so essentially we're doing that with 100,000 cars a day driving through a construction project. So the phasing and the management of traffic is a huge component of what we do. The barriers are really there to keep everyone safe, the workers as well as the drivers. And so I think you mentioned the stress of driving through the area. And one of the things we notice, because we always take a hard look at this, the lanes are not any narrower than they were before. It just so happens now you have a barrier there that people tend to shy away from a little bit. But what we're noticing is that the biggest component of crashes that we're seeing in construction projects on I-10 specifically, we've done some analysis, is that there's three factors involved. And those are the main three factors, probably 80% of the crashes out there. One is driver inattention, either looking around at the construction or being on their phone or something along those lines. Speeding. If you drive the posted speed limit we have on the construction zone, it's actually fairly safe and comfortable. And the third one is following too closely. Again, in a construction zone, because of the tightness of the barriers and all that, that following distance is huge, because if there's anyone that has to slow down for whatever reason, there's no place to go. So those three factors are the main factors that are causing crashes on a construction project, on I-10, and really on any construction project. But the barriers are there to keep really everyone safe, and the lanes are not any narrowed. They're the same width. It's just obviously we have to guide the traffic through a active construction project. I will say one thing that we have added to that project, as and people will probably notice it as they drive. We've installed some truck detection and warning system. So if there's a construction vehicle that's exiting the construction zone and trying to jump into the active lanes, there'll be specific entrance exits that they'll use. It'll trigger an alarm, and so the we have signs that have flashers, which indicate that there's a truck entering the highway. That alerts the driver to, okay, let me either slow down or slide over, let that truck, because those big trucks take a little while to get going, so let them get into the lane safely. That's helped a lot.
When you look at those concrete barriers that are put up, and you say that's the same size as a regular lane, but I see a lot of scuffing, and I see paint, and I see all sorts of stuff on those barriers. It shows me that some people are having a tough time navigating those barriers. I mean, do you see, and you think that's because they're not on their game, they're not paying attention?
I think it's a combination of the three factors I mentioned, the inattention. Unfortunately, people are still distracted when they're driving, a good percentage of them.
And you got construction workers out there, and a lot of stuff going on.
Equipment, and that's easy to get distracted, too, looking at all the construction. And then speeding, and speeding remains a major problem in any highway, but specifically when you have a construction zone. So, yeah, with the barriers, the lanes are the same width, but you do have less room for error because you don't have a shoulder you can pull off of. So you do have to be, paying attention and following the speed limit. Those are the main things.
Okay, let's go to the phones, 210-614-8980. Dina. Hi, Dina. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Okay, my concern is relational to future plans for extending VIA service, or VIA Trans in particular, to help individuals with disabilities. Because right now, VIA Trans only goes as far as 1604 and I-10. And we've even got a division of the community college for Alamo College is going in a year from this spring. And I'm wondering what can be done to help those individuals.
All right, Dana, thank you for the call. So let's go to Sid Martinez with the MPO.
Yeah, unfortunately, a lot of the money that we get comes siloed to us. So it's not like, we get a blank check that tells us, okay, you can build whatever you want and do whatever projects you want to do in your region. We're limited. The money comes down in buckets. So a lot of the money that we get is set aside for highways and roadways based on the state legislature here in Texas and based on the federal government. So VIA is severely limited by funding, unfortunately. They don't have the resources that we have on the highway side for transit, and so that puts a big limitation on the service that they can provide. They're also, you know, and I know there's no one here from VIA today. I can't speak specifically to the VIA Trans program, unfortunately, but I know that it's always been a problem because the cost of running VIA Trans is really, really high. And it's a big financial cost to VIA. And so to expand that service would really, really eat into their budget quite a bit. And I know Bill has worked for VIA. He might have more knowledge on that than I do. But I know that it is a huge challenge for VIA, and I know that they try to operate as efficiently as possible.
So, Bill Barker, can you talk a little about how mass transit, like buses, is that being thought about in these types of circumstances as we do the build out?
Well, yes, but as Sid pointed out, money is an issue, and VIA is underfunded, frankly. And then geography is an issue too. They are bound to, VIA's bound to provide service within the designated service area that the voters have participated in. And so those are two constraints. But another factor here is the density of the development. If you end up with a sprawling low density area, it's very inefficient to provide any kind of transportation, transit being one, but that's inefficient for cars and bikes and people on foot as well. So the way we develop also is tightly bound up with what we have in the way of transportation options.
So way we develop is with single-use residency areas, just lots of homes, and just keep building more homes and forcing people really to, if you want services, then you've got to be able to hop into a vehicle. You got to have a car to get there. That's how we build out.
Exactly. My dentist lives in a subdivision. The only way in and out is on US 281. And they have to get out on US 281 to go to the dry cleaner or buy groceries or take their child to school or whatever. And if you design a community like that, you're going to generate a lot more traffic, and it's going to be focused on specific roads, like 281 in this case, et cetera. So you can't separate out how we develop, as far as land development is concerned, from our transportation system.
And so, Mario Jorge, with the TxDOT, the highway system has become like the central way of getting around in these areas, and so there's a lot of pressure on making these things operational and having them serve a lot of people simultaneously, right?
Absolutely, and so it just seems like you're always fighting uphill on swimming uphill on all these upriver. By the time we get to a project, unfortunately, the growth is probably already there. The traffic is already there. And so we're behind the eight ball. But one thing that we are trying to do, and this is taking a good concerted effort with the MPO and other locals, is to at least begin building a high occupancy vehicle lanes along these major corridors, along I-10, along 281, along 35. We'll have one along 1604, and then trying to find a way to get those high
sure.
occupancy vehicle lanes into downtown.
Right. Well, so we're going to talk about those HOV lanes when we come back from the break. The number is 210-614-8980. Do these HOV lanes, how do they work? How much traffic do they really get off the road? Is it an investment? How well does it work? 210-614-8980. We'll be right back after this quick break.
Immigration.
I think we need to all get in before the wall goes up.
Health.
The Promotora, they have all the resources that can get them the help that they need.
Art.
There's this kind of subversiveness to it, right?
We cover all these topics and more on Fronteras as we examine issues along the border and beyond. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras where you find your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about construction on the I-10 corridor between 1604 and Burney. If you haven't been along that road for a long time, count your blessings because it is kind of torn up. Let's go to the phone lines, 210-614-8980, and go to Bob. Hi, Bob. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you today?
Okay. Go ahead.
Well, I'll tell you, I've lived here 27 years in Burney, worked at Northeast Baptist and a couple other hospitals, and closer. But anyway, nothing like what we have now. I mean, if you're on that road, and you had an earlier person that said, well, the lanes are just as wide. Well, they might be. But there's no give one way or the other. If you go 2 inches to the right, you get hit by the other side. You go 2 inches to the left, you get hit by the cement blocks and thrown out there. And, I mean, I don't think it's really safe the way they're doing it.
All right, Bob, thank you for that. So let's go back to Mario Jorge with the TxDOT. His concern is safety, and I'm sure that's your concern as well. But can you address his, you know, he's saying that these things are tight. No room for error.
Right, and that's what I mentioned earlier, that the barriers are there for a reason, and that is obviously to keep the drivers and the workers safe. And so they are tight. I mean, as far as you have the two lanes that you have before, same width on the lanes, but there is no shoulder. So the barriers are there, again, and they are designed for safety. So I do understand that some people may go off a little bit and hit them, and that creates an accident. Again, I go back to the factors, because we're trying to build this particular project with, you know, 100,000 cars driving through every day. If we could close it and just build it, we'd be done in 6 months. But, you know, we can't do that.
So yeah, no way. So do y'all track? So is there any tracking of numbers for collisions during this process?
We analyze the crash. And so we've gone back and looked at that particular I-10 corridor within those limits from 2010 to current, and we looked at before construction and during construction. And what you see, and this is typical of any construction project, the number of crashes does increase, but not necessarily severe ones. There's a lot of fender bender type crashes, which is what you would expect because, you know, again, a little bit tighter, and so you're going to have some of those. But the severity is not, it's really the same.
Sure.
That doesn't change.
Well, if a person has a traffic violation in a construction zone, there's like a multiplier effect that increases the fine, correct?
Correct. The fines will be doubled as per the law. So, and again, that's a matter of enforcement. And we do try to, get the law enforcement to help us out, and they do with traffic control.
So that should be a strong motivator to get people to slow down, you know. But you get that fender bender, and everyone kind of stops their car in the middle of the road, and they all get out and scratch their heads and look at the damage. And that ties up everyone else's traffic, you know. That can totally bring everything to a standstill, right?
Yeah, so a couple of things on that, because actually I'm glad you brought that up. In a fender-type situation, the law actually requires that the drivers of the vehicle, assuming everyone's okay and the vehicles are drivable, that they get off the road, and that's required by law. So the first thing, when a person calls 911 after having been in a fender bender on the highway, the dispatcher will ask those two questions. Anyone hurt? Are the vehicles drivable? And they will instruct them, get off the road, you know, pull completely off the road and for a safe location. Because what we are very concerned about, and it happens, unfortunately, is a secondary accident when someone is standing outside their vehicle and they get hit. And that does happen, and unfortunately, you know, when those happen, that's a tragic situation. So you go from a fender bender property damage to a potential fatal somebody gets hit because they're standing outside their vehicle while traffic is moving. So I'm glad you brought that up. That's a big message to everyone is, you know, if the vehicle's fine, everyone's fine, get off the road completely.
All right, let's go to the caller with Esteban. Esteban, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, guys, thanks. I've been living out here on Bernie Stage Road in I-10 for the last 5 years, and the construction obviously hasn't stopped, and I don't have a solution, but I do have a complaint. I mean, there hasn't been any visible improvement at all. We've been still stuck with two lanes. We haven't got to three yet. And then you heard the caller, a few callers earlier, asking about the allocation of monies and stuff, and you guys say, well, you're looking at the plans 20 years out. I mean, this is the best you could do 5 years ago?
All right, let's go to Sid Martinez, the director of the Alamo Area Metropolitan Planning Organization, and this is why you're here, to take these calls.
Yeah, you see the tug of war. You know, some people want the projects faster, some people don't want the projects at all. You know, so it's one of those things that we're constantly dealing with. But, you know, we can only move as fast as the funding comes to this region. And unfortunately, you know, we're a big state with a lot of needs, and so we're competing with the rest of the state in terms of state dollars, with the other states in terms of federal dollars. And so we can only move as fast as the funding comes to this region. And so we've been working on these plans for a long time, like we said, but you know, now the funding is there and the project's moving forward, and construction is progress and progress is pain. And so, you know, unfortunately, until that project's complete, people I know are going to have some heartache over it.
So it's my imagination. Sometimes I see a highway project, they're coming along, there's shovels, dirt flying, everything's going great, and then comes to a halt. And then 3 months later, it starts flying again. Do they run out of money and then they had to get more money? What happened?
No, I think that's probably a better question for Mario, since he's the one that deals with construction and budgets. But and I don't know.
Okay, let me get Mario on that.
Yeah. So good question. So you know, when we start construction on a project, it's a contract. It's not done by TxDOT. It's a private contractor, highway contractor. They have a certain amount of time to complete the project. That's by contract, and that's based on a critical path schedule based on resources. So they are then now responsible to meet that schedule, or they will be charged significant damages. There's also incentives on some of these major projects to complete the projects earlier. So the contractor, as any private contractor, will then be managing the resources accordingly and based on the critical path. And what people may not see is that the critical path may be completing a bridge on the project and not necessarily working on the rest of the project, because once they get that bridge done, then they can move traffic in that direction. So those are decisions the contractor makes on their schedule and the resources. We monitor to make sure they stay on schedule and they stay on you know, obviously provide the quality that's required by the contract. But that's what you see. Construction, construction's not linear. You'll see it. You'll see a lot of progress early on because they're turning dirt, like you mentioned. They're going doing all the underground stuff. Things are very visible. And then it seems to have slowed down, but they're not. They're just working on other aspects of the project that are critical to finishing the project. So, again, it's almost like building a house. Your foundation, you see a lot of stuff going up. You see the foundation. Right. You see the framing, it looks great, and then you see the sheetrock, and then it slows down because you're doing all the finishing work that's required for the house.
You don't build a roof and then work on the foundation. You got to do the right thing at the right time. Let's go to a caller, Daniel. And Daniel, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, David. Good question. I was just curious to know, and I'm sure they factored this into their planning, but with Bucky's coming online supposedly within the next year or so, is that going to cause some major detours off I-10? How's that going to impact that mess that's there in Bernie right now? And do they know timing-wise when all that's supposed to start? Because it's only going to make a bad thing worse.
All right, the Bucky's effect on Texas transportation. I'm sure there have been a lot of PhD reports on this. So, Sid, can you want to talk about that, Sid Martinez?
Actually, again, I think that would be a Mario question, just because it is a construction phasing.
Right, but it's like these Bucky's things, that is like changing the surface of the earth. Mario, do y'all look at Bucky's, how that's going to impact?
Absolutely. So again, you know, we can only work on developments that we know are coming. So a lot of these developments are, you know, behind the scenes until it becomes public. So Bucky's approached us when they were planning that site, and so we were able to take their information and coordinate that with our project. So they are working, their construction plan is to be finished right when we finish. So they know our schedule, and so they were going to match that schedule on their end. Their project will be a little quicker than ours, so that's why there's nothing going on at their site. But they're letting us get ahead to a point that then they'll start, and the idea is to finish both projects at the same time.
So Bill Barker at UTSA, you're the architecture, construction, and planning college there. What do you call like a super user like that of a highway when someone comes on board and they dramatically impact the flow of traffic? Is that something that y'all consider?
Actually, there is a term, major trip generator, which I'm not sure Bucky's is quite in that category, but there's that is part of the parlance of traffic engineering and planning, is to consider major traffic generators.
And so people have to look at, you know, how that is going to be impact people wanting to get off there, wanting to get on to highway from there. If you don't do that right, if you don't have the planning done, then you just make the situation even more complex and dangerous, right?
Yes, but I'm confident that TxDOT is taking care of that from the design perspective of how people would get on and off to get to Bucky's.
Okay, and people have worked that out. And so are there other things that are considered, you know, Mario, with this project, you know, that Bernie is such a big, is growing all the time?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So what we're building now, and let me say something, because I think it's really important. There's a lot of construction going on right now on I-10, obviously, but if you drive 281, I think Professor Barker mentioned 281 is all under construction north of 1604 as well. And then 1604 will be soon under construction on the north side as well. So,
and 35.
Exactly. So now these projects take years to plan. It's not something that, right, that you know, you just don't put a project like this together. You have to do environmental studies.
Right. We're going to talk about the environmental impact on all this when we come back from the break. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. We're talking about the I-10 corridor construction. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. Sustainability is a big concern, environmental concerns here, talking about air quality and also impact on climate change. So, Professor Bill Barker, can you talk about what's the calculus here? What's going on? How do we think about environment when we do these projects?
Well, people that do these projects are required by federal government to think about the environment, but they key things here are for example, water. Bernie, for example, is there because of Cibolo Creek, and people in San Antonio are especially concerned about water. Related to that is the flooding. We're in the flash flood alley, the Austin-San Antonio corridor, because the Edwards Aquifer and the Balcones Fault. We have, as you know, we're failing in air quality as far as ozone is concerned in Bexar County. There's concern about climate change and the greenhouse gas emissions. Bexar County is one of 10 counties out of the 3,100 in the United States that are the highest in gasoline consumption for transportation. So there's a lot of issues related to the environment, air, water, the impervious cover that prevents the aquifer from recharging and pollutes the stormwater runoff and makes it worse.
But as we build these highways, eventually the construction will be done and we'll have these extra lanes and people will be motoring along and just be happy as can be until, you know, then more people will move out there and the congestion returns 3 days after they cut the ribbon on the highway, right?
That's the induced travel effect that I think you're aware of.
So more highways means more development, and more development means we need more highways.
Again, the way to approach it is to think about what kind of community do you want and to build the transportation system to support that and work with that kind of community.
Okay, and Sid Martinez with the Alamo Area Metropolitan Planning Organization, you are also planning not just for traffic, but also looking at the environmental impact, right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, as Bill said, with every project that's completed, there's some environmental work that's associated with that, and that can take years to do. And you try to mitigate the circumstances, and you try to work around, you know, ensuring that whatever project's being built is being built to not harm the environment. And so, and we do that on a regional scale as well with air quality. We make sure that the projects that are being added to this region aren't worsening the air. And that's obviously really important for a non-attainment area like ours.
All right. So, Mario Jorge with TxDOT, you wanted to add on this?
Yeah. I think Sid talked about the regional approach that the MPO takes, very important with conformity, air conformity, and things of that nature. But each project, we go through a very detailed environmental assessment and sometimes an environmental impact statement process. And there's two major things we look at. One is socioeconomic, which obviously involves people, and then the ecological resources, which is then, of course, you know, the rest of the environment, the water resources, the endangered species, and things of that nature. So every project, and it has extensive public involvement. We have multiple public meetings for every project. So we try to be as transparent as possible, obviously, while ensuring that the project will not harm the environment, in some cases help it, and especially like Professor Barker mentioned on the flooding and drainage and things of that nature.
So the HOV, the HOV lanes, high was occupancy vehicle lanes, how does that work? Who gets to use these lanes? Sid?
Yeah. At this time, we haven't determined what the standards will be. So, but at some point, as those lanes near to completion, you would look at the traffic volumes that are there and decide whether they would be required to have two passengers, three passengers. You can determine that by time of day, so you can do it just in the peak periods. The whole point is to try to minimize the number of cars out there, single occupancy vehicles, and try to get more people to carpool, vanpool, and then also again use transit. So you would have those lanes could be transit priority lanes as well. So you would hope that you could get people on buses and they would have an easier commute, a smoother commute. And so you could make changes on that depending on what type of traffic you're seeing in those areas.
And they're going to be policed, enforced?
Yes.
You get a ticket?
I would imagine.
Okay. So, Bill Barker, do HOV lanes work?
Well, they...
And do they reduce traffic?
Well, they kind of theoretically work in the sense that you can move more people in the corridor than you could before. Sometimes they have a public relations problem in that the lanes may look empty to somebody sitting in a more congested lane for regular cars. And so sometimes there's some friction that develops over that because they see these cars zipping by, the carpool cars zipping by, and they're sitting in traffic. But I did want to mention that in California they found that the electric cars or hybrid cars access to the HOV lanes, regardless of how many people they have in them, has really had an effect on people buying those kinds of cars so they could get a sticker to use on the HOV lanes.
And is that something that you're considering, Sid?
Again, we haven't made those decisions yet, so I'm sure that it's something that can definitely be looked at as we move forward.
I mean, I can see how that would change things. Let's go to the callers. Let's go to Cole. And Cole, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you. This topic is extremely stimulating to me. I just got an idea concerning the overload of people between the flow of traffic and the construction workers, and that would simply be to try to have most of the construction done at night, in the nighttime hours, when you don't have so much traditional routine traffic on the road.
All right, let me get the answer from Mario Jorge about that. Doing the construction at night, what are the difficulties? At least it's cooler, right?
Yeah, no, and actually we do a lot of construction at night. All of our paving pretty much is done at night. A lot of our concrete pouring is done at night because of the cooler temperatures and so the materials work better in regards. Obviously less traffic for equipment to get in. So we do a lot of construction work at night. Most people don't see that because obviously it's not most people are not up at 3 in the morning. But that's when a lot of our major work is actually done. And so it's part of our tools that we have to continue to use, especially with as much traffic as we have here. The thing is, again, because of the nature of the amount of traffic traveling through these corridors, it's not just a work at night and be done and open the lanes in the morning. I mean, that can happen for some paving operations, but for these major projects, although we do a lot of night work, we're not really necessarily changing the traffic patterns during the day.
All right, and another caller, John. Hey, John, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I was wondering if it's possible to modify existing highways where there are no future plans to add new lanes, for example, creating new exit ramps or even closing some entrance ramps based on current traffic for a highway that was maybe built 10 to 20 years ago.
All right, John. So, and can you address that, Sid Martinez?
You know, we obviously haven't looked at that per se. I think what people want out of most interstate highways is more access. And so it's limited depending on the use and what's out there today. But one good example, I guess, of something that's kind of in that realm is the expansion of I-35 is going to be elevated lanes eventually from downtown to the Bexar County, Kumaui County line. And those elevated lanes will have limited access. So the whole point of those are to get people through the corridor. So you'll probably have access when you enter in those downtown at 410, at 1604, and that's it. They will not have access along all of the existing exits along 35. And again, that's to get traffic through that corridor.
So if we're not going to get rail, high-speed rail in San Antonio, they said this is not going to happen. But these HOV lanes or the elevated lanes that you're talking about, if we're able to get some sort of rapid bus transportation, mass transit, is that part of the plan there, Mario?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So everything we've done with the HOV lanes is really in close cooperation with VIA. As a matter of fact, VIA is going to be our operator. We're going to have an operation and maintenance agreement with them so they can help us, essentially operate the HOV lanes. And the long-term view that, and I guess really short-term in some cases, VIA is looking at some rapid transit type corridors where the transit will have its guaranteed lane. And so they can tap into some of these HOV lanes and then look at some of the other corridors, city arterials, that they can have some room to put in a dedicated transit lane that would then be able to flow through some of the arterials as well. So our plan meshes very well with VIA's a plan, long-term plan of rapid transit corridors within the city.
And Professor Bill Barker, has that been proven to be a good approach? Does that work?
Well, this is a kind of a complicated subject. There's a lot of pieces to it. Certainly having a dedicated lane for transit vehicles will improve the speed of the transit system and will attract more riders. How much of that you can do in an existing urban area is one of the difficulties. If you take a lane, that means you're taking a lane from somebody that's already using it.
But if it's the HOV lane, then can that be that?
Yeah, if it's a new lane that's for HOV and transit vehicles should be able to use it, that's not a problem.
And Sid Martinez, with all of the, we're surrounded, looks like, you know, everywhere you go, it's going to be a construction project. So you guys are really busy trying to coordinate all this. And this is all, when's all this come to a head?
I don't think we can see no construction in the foreseeable future. I mean, we're going to be, and I think Mario talked about this yesterday at our monthly Transportation Policy Board meeting. I mean, we're going to be under construction for the foreseeable future in this region.
And for I-10 specifically, that's like 2024, you think it'll be wrapped up around there?
Mario.
Oh, okay. Well, we're out of time, so hang on. We're done. I want to thank all of our guests, Mario Jorge, Sid Martinez, Bill Barker. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia, and Jan Ross Piedad. Dan Katz is TPR's news director.